Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
The surface. There I am. Good evening, everybody. Glad you could make it. Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio 980 on your dial every Monday night between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets, and they shall meet tonight with my guest across the console from me, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Complain I can't. Kent, how are you?
I noticed that's kind of a trademark line of yours. Is that your Yoda tribute?
Yeah, believe it or not, I've been told about Yoda. I've never seen Yoda, so.
You know, I never have either.
Oh, really?
I saw the first Star Wars movie and that was it.
Yeah.
I never saw a subsequent.
Nobody believes, well.
Sequel.
Not too many people believe this when I say it, but I saw the first Star Wars movie at a drive-in theater with a couple of friends, and it was so boring that after about 45 minutes, we left.
Wow.
And we've never seen any Star Wars since then.
That is hard to believe. Now, I saw the first one. I was just a wee prat, and I was with my aunt, and I grew up in New York, and it just so happened we were up in Massachusetts, and my aunt took me to see it at some theater down near Fall River. And all I remember about it was that when we got out of the theater and to her car was really, really hot.
Okay. That's all you remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good memory.
No, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, lightsabers and Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and, you know, those flying spaceship battling, whatever they would be, and Princess Leia and R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Okay, you got them all down.
And Chewbacca and Han Solo.
See, I'm as bored right now as I was back then when I first saw it.
So the show tonight is on Star Wars.
No, actually it isn't. Tonight, ladies and gentle things.
Other kinds of wars?
Tonight, we delve beneath the surface on other kinds of wars, yeah. Tonight, we delve beneath the surface on the topic of pride parades.
Pride parades.
They've been in the news for a little while now, and we're going to talk about them. From various angles, and if you want to delve beneath the surface with us in this topic or any topic of your choice, 978-454-4980. That is, the BTS hotline is 978-454-4980. Before we get talking, Cindy, are you there? How was your week?
How you doing?
Good. Cindy, our producer, behind the glass from where I am. What's happening? How's your week?
It's been boring for the past couple days.
Yeah, how was the third day before today?
Yesterday work, and today I didn't have work.
No, no, the day before that. You were
day
working.
Before that, that was kind of fun. I got to work, and then I got to have fire with my dad out in the backyard.
Oh, oh, that's cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. There she is, ladies and gentlemen, Cindy.
Okay. So wouldn't we be behind the glass from where Cindy sits?
She is, but you know, Cindy now is, she's so popular that she just goes by her first name, like Cher.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's
you said Cher and Cindy. Not Madonna.
And Madonna.
Or Elvis, for that matter.
Elvis, yeah. Okay. We should do a show on
or
that.
Or Prince.
Have people call up to say, can you think of anybody that's known only by their first name? You just named about five of them. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah. Who else?
I don't know.
Can you think of anybody who's known only by a nickname?
Only by a nickname.
Is Prince, right?
Prince.
Was he born Prince?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it. I don't know the trivia there, but yeah. I'm kind of thinking he probably wasn't.
Big Poppy, who was unfortunately shot yesterday.
I hear he's going to be okay, though.
Stable condition.
Yeah.
Still in intensive care, though.
Crazy,
from
huh?
what I know, from what I understand.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
Kind of scary.
So I think from now on, you should just be Kent.
I mean, the artist formerly known as...
The talk host guest, the talk show guest,
yeah,
known as Kent, not formerly known.
All right.
Yeah, presently known as Kent, and formerly known, and in the future will be known as.
Now, do you remember when Prince even took it a step further?
Well, did the symbol, you mean?
And he just wanted to be known by that symbol.
Yeah, that's where the formerly known comes in.
Yeah, so the artist formerly known as Prince, because it's an unpronounceable thing.
Unpronounceable symbol,
I guess he was trying to sort of isolate himself from fame or something like that. I don't really know the story behind
it. I don't know the motive.
But I was living in Atlanta at the time, and the symbol that he came up with was not simply, but partially... the merging of a male and female symbol, you know, those circles with the arrow sticking out of the plus, and there was something else on there. So, and he wanted to get beyond like gender or something like that. And so the DJs in Atlanta on the station I listened to, which I don't remember what it was called, they started calling him, he didn't want to be, didn't want a masculine pronoun, didn't want a feminine pronoun, so they started calling him Shim.
Well, he was right at the beginning,
the avant-garde, right,
of the transgender movement.
Yeah,
and I put that in quotes. We can talk about that a little bit too during our show tonight. But it's funny you mention that, because one of the things that we are going to talk about a little later in our show is the Straight Pride Parade that's coming up in Boston.
See now, Paul, how could you do that to me? You asked me what did I want to do a show on, and I said, you know, we could do a show on anything you want. Just let's not make it controversial.
Yeah, sure, you said that. This was your idea to do the show on this topic, and I said, sure, why not?
Actually, it wasn't my idea. Someone else gave me the idea. Yeah, who shall go nameless?
Okay, formerly known as nameless
the,
person.
The inspiration.
but apparently this the organizers of this particular parade have a flag, a straight pride flag, and it is the symbols of male and female, like you were saying.
Oh, really?
But it's not intertwined, like apparently you're saying that Prince intertwined them.
They were like
them
superimposed
one.
On each other with.
Yeah, well,
these
are, you can see the distinction, I guess.
Okay.
And, but the flag basically is saying, well, these two symbols are meant for each other, complementary, halves of humanity. 978-454-4980. Tonight we go beneath the surface on the topic of pride parades. All right, Kent. Before we get into the contents of the parade, because that in itself is controversial, and what parades do, which is another interesting question. First, let's talk about the word pride. Now, generally speaking, there seem to be two distinct definitions of the word pride. One of them relates to a feeling of elation or satisfaction with oneself or another that is sort of a secure, satisfied feeling.
Yeah.
I take pride in my work, for example.
A recognition of your gifts and your accomplishments.
I'm proud of my son or daughter.
An admiration, right?
Kind of, sort of-ish, mm-hmm. Yeah. The other definition is more an inordinate self-respect or a conceit.
Arrogance.
A disordered love of self, that kind of thing.
Right,
and this is where the sin of pride, of course,
comes into
place.
One of the seven deadly sins.
Yeah. Now, we can, you know, you could say that one is, you know, just the other one is, they're related, but one goes off the deep end, you could say.
Sure.
And that would mm-hmm. be the sin of pride.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, these pride parades that we're talking about, not the straight pride parade, but the gay pride parades, which of those two definitions do you think they're speaking of?
You know, what do I think they're speaking of?
Or what do you think it is?
I would say that it has I think they think it's the first definition that
okay.
you gave.
Yeah.
But I think that in practice or in its essence, it really is a whole lot more of the other thing. If, as you say, pride is one of the seven deadly sins and they're saying that they're very proud mm-hmm. of what they are, to the point of, you know, I just want to mm-hmm. use the common phrase, the in your face kind yeah. of attitude about it, which is a lot of the photos that I've seen from the parade itself.
Yeah.
Are sort of taking that approach.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that it's, shouldn't, no, well, let me put it this way. When somebody is saying loudly that they're proud of themselves, doesn't that kind of indicate that they're not?
You know, Shakespeare has that line, "Methinks thou dost protesteth too much."
Yeah.
In other words, someone who is going over the top, you might say, with how innocent they are or how good they are or things like this, where you think, boy, it makes me a little suspicious that you're that extreme about it. And so I think that's kind of what you're getting at, that if you have to go that far out of your way to, I don't know if the word is justify what you're doing, but to...
Well, do you think that's what they're trying to do?
I think that there's a sentiment behind it that the more people accept this, the more it legitimizes it, the more it's okay.
Yeah, correct. But to call to organize a parade and then to call it a gay pride parade, what does that do? I mean, does that say that they are proud of their homosexuality?
Yeah.
And is it an attempt? I mean, who cares if you're proud of that? I mean,
right.
The question is it an attempt to mold other people's minds and hearts to the goodness or the acceptance of homosexuality? What is the aim or goal of these parades?
I would think a lot of this is speculation, but I would think perhaps it started out along those lines. And then it seems to, like many movements do, they get co-opted by some extreme wing of the movement. And it seems to me that what the gay pride parades actually look like, or how they are, I want to say performed, right, is something more rebellious, let's say. It's an act of rebellion as opposed to, say, awareness or trying to legitimize.
Well, there
something.
Are two things to unpack there then. What are they rebelling against, and what are we supposed to be aware of?
Right.
I mean, these are important questions.
Yeah.
I want to understand these parades.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so which one of those two questions do you want to tackle first?
Either one. You're the host.
Well, okay, what are we supposed to be aware of?
So I think what usually happens with sort of underdog minority movements is the first thing they attempt to do is say, let's just have a dialogue about this. And so, or they start saying, let's raise awareness about this issue so that we can have a dialogue about it. And so what you end up getting, when really their agenda is not to have a dialogue, not to seek the truth, but it's to get your way, right? And I would say this is true.
To persuade people of a way of thinking rather than to seek the truth together.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not, let's dialogue this, let's dig in, let's try to figure out what the truth really is, let's see where the truth lies.
I tell you what, it seems to me that even the way that you began to frame that is false, and it is a way that it is something that you have been conditioned by that agenda to speak like.
I was going to say, it's very disingenuous. Mm. I don't believe that people are saying, let's just talk about this.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the very beginning. You said minority groups. Right there, I think you have been conditioned by this agenda. people, I mean, why are people who have a certain attraction or, you know, feeling towards something a minority group?
I use the term minority group in the sense that it would be a numerical minority. And so when...
But a numerical minority of what?
Of anything.
But minority groups in our country usually have been race, ethnicity...
Sure, yeah, right.
Sex, so, something that is based truly in nature.
Right, so when you and I were, you know, aware of what was going on in the world around us in, say, the 70s, minorities meant probably black people, African Americans, right? And then you would think, okay, then Hispanics.
Yeah,
go from there.
Exactly, but right. What you're saying is important. Minority people are... Mm-hmm. People. They are
correct.
We're talking about the identities of people, something that is rooted in nature as their identity.
Right.
I think the problem. Could you hold off on that for 1 second, Cindy? This is too important for a point before we get to the break. I think how our thinking today has been co-opted is that they're saying that this is a minority group of one's identity. It's an identity rooted in nature. That's false. That's like saying, people with bad tempers should have a parade to celebrate this as a minority group.
Sure, right.
Or people that do certain things or have certain feelings. It's not necessarily their identity.
Yeah, this was one of the points I was going to make about the pride marches in general, whether they're straight pride or gay pride, is that they both seem kind of ludicrous that you are going to march to take pride in your... In the nature or the, I guess you could say the nature of your sexual attractions, right? And it seems to me that what ought to be celebrated, I don't think it even needs to be celebrated, is our common humanity, right? And so what we ought to be recognizing in each other is humanity. Now, we're all a mixed bag of virtues and vices and
right, but
disorders.
Those are things that we do and feel.
Exactly.
When you're talking about ethnicity and race, you're talking about truly what you are.
Exactly.
Not what you feel or what you choose to do.
What your ethnicity is.
Yeah.
Right.
That is really a part of what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I propose to you that this is not what you are. It's either what you feel or what you choose to do. And hence, they shouldn't be called a minority in that respect.
Well, I guess you could use the term minority for a lot of things, right?
Well,
you could say people, you know, we took a survey of who likes vanilla and who likes chocolate, and people who like vanilla were in the minority.
They're in the minority, but not for political reasons. This is for political reasons, and hence, it's an identity thing. People who like vanilla do not identify as vanilla lovers.
Right. They don't have a parade for vanilla.
They don't have a parade for it. They don't seek to have it as
a political agenda.
A political agenda as one of those things that you can't discriminate against. You can't discriminate against vanilla lovers. There's a whole agenda involved in making something that you feel or choose to do your very identity, because you have no choice in one's identity.
Right.
And we're all equal.
Yeah.
Therefore, we all should be treated without any kind of discrimination would be unjust discrimination.
Right.
All right, we need to take a break. Thanks, Cindy, for holding off on that. You can play the music now. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, Paul Morano with Kent Niebuhr, my guest tonight. And the number is 978-454-4980. We're talking about pride parades. We're trying to delve beneath the surface on this. If you disagree or if you agree, or if you have another perspective on this, give us a call, 978-454-4980. Right after this, we'll be back. Don't go away. We are back. Back are we. Beneath the Surface, WCAP Radio, Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
And we're talking about ice cream preferences tonight on the show.
978-454-4980. Speaking of ice cream, I really could enjoy some chocolate chip ice cream right now.
Chocolate chip ice cream? Is that your favorite flavor?
Chocolate chip.
Chocolate chip.
The more chocolate, the better.
Right. I like mocha.
Yeah?
Yeah. I like raspberry.
Do you?
Yeah.
Other than chocolate, my second favorite is banana ice cream.
Wow.
I like banana ice cream with chocolate chips in it.
You know, I think the only time I've had banana ice cream was when a friend of mine made it.
Oh.
And that was about 30 years ago, 30 years ago.
Well,
I know most of our listeners think I'm too young to remember that far back.
Is that what they think?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah.
they have professional banana ice cream. Ben and Jerry's, I believe, has Chunky Monkey.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that? That makes sense.
Yeah, that's banana ice cream. And some ice cream stands have it.
Wow.
978-454-4980. Beneath the surface. Tonight's our main topic is pride parades. What does it mean? You know, we get into meaning here, Kent, on Beneath the Surface. Meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
The what and why of life.
Right.
Makes us human. Separates us from all the other animals.
Yeah. Delving beneath the surface.
Yes. To the what and the why.
Right.
All right. So we talked a little bit last before the break about the what of parade. You know, what are they? You know, what does pride mean?
Yeah.
And we said how there are really kind of two distinct definitions of pride. One is, you know, just innocuous. Most people say, you know, I'm proud of what I just accomplished
or
yesterday.
I'm proud of my son.
And the other one is more the sin of pride, the arrogance, the conceit, the having too much esteem for oneself.
Yeah.
And we talked about last, before the break, how, when we speak about, when we shout out, if you will, to other people that I'm proud of myself, it kind of gives you the indication that they're really not. It's a projection that's really indicating the opposite. I think they're truly ashamed. People are truly ashamed if they have to shout out to others and try to persuade them that they're actually proud of themselves.
I guess it does seem that the people that not talk about how secure they are in themselves, but the people who seem the most secure in themselves are people who tend to be maybe soft-spoken, or I don't know what the
word
would be.
And they would never tell anyone how proud they are of themselves.
Yeah. You know, some of the people we admire most are people who accomplish great things and never have any fanfare about it whatsoever.
And I would even say this, and those who suffer without complaining.
Yeah, right. How many times do you hear, about there's a funeral and one person after the other after another. First of all, a tremendous number of people show up for this funeral. And one person after another gets up and says, what this person did for me was the greatest thing ever. And I was having this hard time and he helped me out. And then you hear all these stories and even immediate family members, spouses, children, they're like, I had no idea he was doing all these great things and, one person after the other coming out. And so that's the kind of person that describes someone's sort of the greatness of their person.
Yes.
And they don't have to advertise at all.
Yeah. Now, there are some persons who believe that they are not accepted for who they are. And they believe that others should raise their awareness of this unacceptance as being unacceptable. So in other words, it is a kind of a reaching out to others saying, this discrimination that I feel from the rest of society is unjust, and we need to do something about that. So I would say that these pride events fit into that category. But as we talked about last, before the break, we really need to delve beneath the surface on this question as to whether homosexuality is an identity. Because, let me just give you a generally speaking, up until relatively recently, the word homosexual, well, first of all, the word gay didn't exist, but the word homosexual was an adjective. It meant, it referred to feelings or actions, particularly actions, homosexual acts. Nobody, until the recent wave of political agenda, was ever labeled a homosexual.
Right.
Their personhood, who they are.
Yeah.
Never, wasn't even considered
right
before this modern movement. Now the word homosexual is being placed as a noun for persons rather than simply feelings or acts. And because it is now labeled as an identity, it is a political agenda. You cannot, you cannot say anything negatively about homosexual behavior because, falsely, it is part of their identity as to who they are. This is nonsense. This is like saying a pedophile is who they are, or somebody who, who knows, a pyromaniac, a kleptomaniac, or whatever disordered desire somebody may have deeply within them is who they are rather than what they feel. That is a nonsensical way of looking at the human person.
Cass. Would you say it's also, going back to the example that I gave, that if your preference is for vanilla ice cream over chocolate ice cream, that if I made that, if I turned that into identity politics, it's the same thing.
It's similar because it's what a person feels or desires rather than truly who they are.
Sure, right. The fact that I have a preference for vanilla ice cream does not define me as a human being. Right.
That's not your label.
Right. And it is a very particular,
it's not your identity.
Narrow aspect of my existence, but it doesn't define what I am.
And that is one point. The second point is, and this is going to be, of course, not accepted by everybody, particularly today, but the second point is, our species, the human species, has a particular orientation as male and female, as created for each other for the sake of, you know, union and procreation. Whereas having a desire or an attraction for people of the same sex is not a legitimate orientation according to our nature. It's rather a disorientation. So what these pride parades are actually saying is, accept me not as a human being, as an equal human being to you, but accept my disordered feelings so that I may act upon them in public without being discriminated against.
I would say that, I was thinking about this over the break, that what I get an underlying current of the gay pride parades is that they are seeking our approval.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Now, I believe if you went and...
But for what, though? For their common humanity or for their behaviors?
For their sexual attractions and their sexual behaviors.
Right.
Their sexual acts, right.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, I think if I were to go attend the parade and walk up to some participant in the parade and say, I believe you're seeking my approval, I think they would probably deny that.
I wouldn't doubt it. But then again, what else are they doing?
Right.
Why have a parade?
And why call it a pride parade,
right,
if you're not seeking the approval of those who would be aware of it or watching it.
Right. So we've come to a point where if you do not approve of the behaviors, and of course they love to conflate the feelings with the behaviors because that way they have sort of an edge on people's shallow thinking because they can say that it's your identity where it really isn't your identity. It's simply your feelings.
Right.
And whether or not you choose to act on them.
Yeah, that kind of pervades sort of all issues now. I think for a very long time, maybe the past 50 years or so, probably more even, the roots can go back very far.
What do you mean all issues?
That our identity is our feelings.
Oh, more and more.
Right.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I believe that's been going on at least since the 60s.
It's more and more, if you feel something, that is you.
Right. So what you feel is what is true.
Let's get beneath the surface on this, a little philosophical here. There is a distinction in every human being between being and becoming, isn't there?
Yeah, right.
You are a particular being. You're not a bird. You can't fly. You can't flap your arms.
Right.
You're not a fish. You can't breathe underwater. You're a particular being, and yet, unlike other beings that don't have free will, we actually can carve out who and what we become by our choices.
Yeah, we can ponder our feelings, and we can consider our feelings, and we could say, ooh, this feeling is something I really need to get under my control, right?
Like, right.
We have things called anger management.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you look at, you go, oh boy, this feeling is sort of inappropriate. It's out of hand. I have to get a handle on that. Or we look at other feelings and say, this is a wonderful feeling. This defines who I am. This ought to be respected by everyone. And I ought to be able to act on this feeling without any interference whatsoever from anyone.
So the question is, what kind of being are we? And do our feelings and attractions and desires, correspond to what truly fulfills my nature?
Well, you know, it's funny. Before I came here, We had dinner. I was cleaning up from dinner, and I ate some cake, and I ate too much of it.
Okay.
And I looked at, and I'm pondering that as I'm driving here, and I'm like, oh man, I really ate too much of that cake. And I'm thinking, look what I did there, right? I had a feeling, this appetite.
Yes.
For that cake.
Yeah.
And I let that appetite override my reason, override my intellect.
So for those few minutes, you became gluttonous.
Yes.
Yes.
And you know, my wife is great. She used to travel to France a lot for work, and she said, she's wondering, why are all these French women so thin? They eat cheese and they eat, you know, all rich foods and pastries and buttery whatever. And she noticed, and they would tell her, you know, if you want to have some cake, just have a bite of cake. You get the full experience of that cake. You absolutely.
By the one bite?
By the one bite, you get the full flavor, the full experience.
Yeah, we have a problem in this country with gluttony, no question about it.
Yeah, and so what I did with that cake tonight, instead, I probably had 20 bites, let's say. So, but they're right. At some point, whether you have one bite or 20 bites or 200 bites, it's going to end.
Yeah.
And that sensation, that pleasure, is going to end with the last bite, or, you know, whatever, 30 seconds after or something like that. And so what effectively is the difference between one bite or 100 bites?
Right.
And so I completely turned off my rational brain, and what was driving me was this appetite, this feeling, this pleasure, this sensation.
But you did, in your reason, understand that it was a disordered desire, even though you were excited about experiencing that.
Well, I would say this. I would say I was mindlessly eating the cake. Right? So in other words, once I get away from it, once the cake is gone, it was the last bit of the cake. So once the cake is gone, and you know, I've sort of, if you want to say, gotten a little distance between me and the cake.
Yes.
Then you have this feeling, oh my goodness, I have this cake in my belly, right?
Yeah, too much of it.
Yeah. And then,
sugar.
Then your rational brain, let's say, kicks in and says, you know, you could have just had a bite.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the goal is to be a virtuous
human.
Feeding
frenzy.
The goal is to be virtuous, and to be a virtuous human being is to have your reason govern your lower nature desires according to what the intellect understands as true and good. So that's the difference here. We humans are able to understand truth and goodness, and we are able to. It's not always easy, but we're able to govern our lower nature desires according to what is true and good according to our human nature. The question here, of course, is whether gluttony, eating too much cake, is true and good for us. Is it good for our nature? And are homosexual acts good for our nature, according to what truly fulfills and makes us flourish?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue that gluttony is bad for our nature. We know that overeating, especially overeating certain types of food or eating certain types of food at all, goes against our nature.
Why?
Because you can see biologically what is it doing for our bodies, right? You put this stuff in,
right,
and what does it do to your body?
Right, but why is that bad? That it makes your body sluggish and a little unhealthy?
Fat.
Yeah, fat.
Well, because we know that fat is not healthy. We know that it has all these kinds of, you know, to be fat, I should say, is not healthy.
In other words, we were not made, our design, our nature was not made for gluttonous activity.
Exactly.
That is not a way for us to flourish according to what is good for us.
Now, I was going to say, let's say I live this gluttonous lifestyle. Should I organize a parade?
For gluttons.
For gluttons.
Well, I suppose that would be a similar situation.
I get
to what we
so
have
much
now.
Pleasure from gluttony. I don't want anybody telling me that I don't have a right to that pleasure. And what the opposition is saying is, we're not telling you don't have a right to do that. We're saying it goes against your nature.
Yes.
To be gluttonous.
Yeah, yeah. But you want to change people's minds and hearts on that, so you have a parade and you call it pride.
Right.
Gluttony pride.
Right.
So then you're saying that the same thing would apply here with gay or homosexual parades. that people who have these disordered desires and wish to act upon them want all of society to approve this so that they can what? They can feel better about themselves, I suppose.
So here's the irony, though. I think that what happens in the end is that whether anybody accepts my gluttony or not, it's still bad for me.
Yeah.
Whether the whole world says, you know what, it's great to be a glutton. Go and be a glutton. We'll have a parade for it. We'll have a flag for it. We'll have, you know, we'll make laws that distinguish gluttony as a protected
right.
class
you
of.
You still don't flourish if you,
you're still
you
gonna,
behave gluttonous.
You're, it's still going to hurt you.
Then how do you convince people in a homosexual lifestyle that they are not flourishing in their homosexual lifestyle?
Yeah, I think that's very difficult because there's always a rationalization.
Right.
For instance, I was having a conversation with someone today and I was pointing out how the suicide rate in the gay community, the homosexual community, is,
right.
is disproportionately high.
Very high.
I don't have any figures,
right.
so you can
look it up.
You can
Google.
Look it up.
yeah.
But it's disproportionately high.
Yeah.
And I was reading an article a few days ago about someone who was a gay porn star, and he's come out of that lifestyle, and he's now trying to help others who are struggling with these issues as well. And he's saying, look, people aren't really happy in this lifestyle, and they know that this
right.
lifestyle is self-destructive.
Deep inside, they know it, even though they're not convincing themselves of it.
Yes,
yeah.
But any time I've had this, I've pointed that out to anyone who
right.
is sort of sympathetic to the gay pride movement,
yeah.
they always say, no, they're miserable because they're not accepted.
Right. And I think even they think that's why they're miserable. On some level. Yes.
Right. So here's the thing.
Exactly.
If I am a glutton,
yeah.
right? Like I said, I ate too much cake tonight.
Yeah.
I probably ate too much dinner too.
Mm.
And so if I start saying, you know what? I'm proud to enjoy food the way I do.
Darn right.
And I'm proud that I can enjoy food the way I do. And I want people to recognize that this is a good thing, what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I even embark on that mission?
In order to try to attempt to justify it to yourself, because if you don't, you'll end up hating yourself.
Exactly. However, I think
that's
that
very
if I can get lots of people to, if I could win lots of people over to the mentality that my gluttony is actually a wonderful, natural, good, admirable thing to be proud of.
Yes.
I believe that then I will be happy with my gluttony. If everyone around me.
That's what you think at this time.
Right.
Yes.
If everyone around
yeah.
me tells
right.
me it's a wonderful thing
yes.
and I'm a wonderful person for being a glutton.
Yes.
Then I will finally be happy.
Exactly.
And this is the argument.
That is the road to happiness.
So when you point
yeah.
out, you were saying, how do we have this dialogue? When you point out, say, a statistic like suicide is extremely high among the homosexual community, there's a response for it, a very pat response
yeah.
that, well, they're committing suicide because they're not accepted.
Isn't it funny how?
And I would say, how can you demonstrate that? Right? Because even if someone writes a suicide note and says, I'm committing suicide because I'm not accepted, is that all the proof you need?
Mm.
Is that demonstrable? Does that demonstrate the reality of it? Or would we have to dig a little deeper? I mean, obviously we couldn't with someone who's committed suicide, but if you dug deeper, like this article I read of this former gay porn star who came out of the lifestyle, came out of the movement, his testimony is that there's a lot of misery in this lifestyle, and it's not because they're not accepted. There's a lot of self-hatred, et cetera, things like this. And this, I'm taking this from this guy's
so
article.
So just to be clear,
I wish I had his name,
just
but,
to be clear,
yeah.
for people who might be a little lost now, there's two distinct things to think about here. Do you hate yourself because society or other people don't accept you? Or are you hating yourself because you are behaving in a way that you know deep down inside, even underneath your consciousness, is very wrong and violates your own nature.
You're harming yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, without even recognizing it.
Right. And I think for the most part, like we always talk about going beneath the surface, but I think most of us live, at least in a day-to-day way, not going beneath the surface. We're just kind of impulsive. We're just these bundles of nerve endings.
That's the problem with the world.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not really self-reflective, right? Yeah. We're not really saying, wait a second, I reacted this way, but why? Can I dig deeper? Now, a lot of people go to counselors and they try to get to the bottom of that. And so I guess what I would say is if you were able to go deeply with people of any kind of vice, like I said, gluttony, right? When you dig deeply, why? What is your motivation for engaging in this vice, right?
Yeah.
And is it really making you happy?
Yeah. So I think what you're saying is underneath it all, there's a self-loathing that they won't admit to themselves, and they think that getting the acceptance of people around them will make them like or love themselves.
You're saying that
will not work.
I'm saying that the article I read by the former gay porn actor, he makes that point. He says, this is what's happening in the gay community. That's what he said. I'm simply reporting that.
Yeah.
However, that makes a lot of sense to me.
I've read a lot of similar things.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense to me.
And first, we have to make some more distinctions because some people might be misunderstanding us. I think what you're saying, Kent, is that you're a Christian, right?
Yes.
You're a Catholic Christian. You believe that God created everybody in his image and likeness and we're all equals. And that we should love our neighbor as ourselves, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's a given. That's a given. But you're also saying that we should not accept certain behaviors in people because they're not for the good of people.
Just like my doctor will tell me, Kent, stop being a glutton.
Exactly. So in your condoning or supporting certain behavioral lifestyles, that would actually be hate.
If my doctor said to me, Kent, go ahead and be a glutton. Don't give it a second thought.
That wouldn't be love.
That would not be love.
Right.
You know, if my father was an alcoholic, if I said, Dad, you know what? Mm. I think it's great that you're an alcoholic.
Right.
Drink all you want.
Because you get enjoyment out of it and that's who you are.
You should be proud of being an alcoholic.
Right. That's not love.
That's not love.
Right.
The loving thing to do with my father was to say, get your act together.
Yeah.
You need to cut this out. You need to stop doing this. You're hurting yourself. You're hurting other people, et cetera, et cetera. Cut it out.
And the more that people sympathize and support Gay Pride Month and gay parades and so forth, the more harmful they are being to these people.
There's a term in psychology called enabling.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
So if I told my dad, you know what, Dad, you go ahead and do whatever makes you happy. You know, you do whatever feels good. I'm enabling his alcoholism.
That's right.
I'm condoning it. I'm abandoning him to his self-destruction.
Okay.
So that would not be love.
Okay, so as you know, as I know, and as everyone listening probably knows, we've had a good 50 years of societal brainwashing, if you will, or at least conditioning to us to believe that if you are against the homosexual lifestyle, behaviors, or if you think that homosexual acts violate human nature, you hate them as persons.
You're a hater.
Yeah, you're a hater.
Right.
Yeah, so how do you deal with this ignorance?
It's just
and these lies?
It's just like we were talking about. I think the first thing I want them to just at least allow me is that I believe that it is contrary to human nature. Right?
Okay.
Allow me to believe. In other words,
right.
I'm asking their tolerance.
Yes.
I would like them to tolerate
my belief
that it is contrary to human nature.
To do such acts.
Right.
Yes.
Now, if we'll go back to the gluttony example. My doctor tells me it is contrary to your nature to engage in gluttony.
Yeah.
And if he didn't tell me that, what's the term when they don't let you be a doctor anymore? They would take away your license or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? They would take away his license.
Right.
You can't tell your patient it's okay to engage in gluttony. That's anti-doctoring, right? So you're no longer a doctor. So if my doctor, if you had cancer, if you had anything and your doctor said, you know what, just keep doing what you're doing, you're fine. That's malpractice.
Now, speaking of that, somebody was doing the opposite of malpractice. They were actually doing their duty. Bishop, Bishop Tobin of mm-hmm. Providence, mm-hmm. by telling Catholics that they cannot in good conscience celebrate Pride Month
right.
by supporting this kind of lifestyle.
Right.
Now that, contrary to what many people believe today, that is an act of love by this bishop.
Exactly, right.
You don't want to enable people, you don't want to have them continue to believe that behavior that violates human nature is acceptable or good for them.
So I was having a conversation with someone about this today, yeah. and what they did was they took my position and they conflated it with abuse. Like, don't you think it's wrong for, you know, people to be beaten up because they're gay, or to be discriminated against because they're gay,
because they have same-sex attraction.
Right.
We can't use this language, that this being language. They are not gay. They have attractions to the same sex.
So what they want to say is because you believe that this is contrary to human nature, they then make a leap.
Yeah.
And by the way, many people who believe it's contrary to human nature make this same leap.
Yeah.
That we can now persecute these people. We can beat them. We can lynch them. We can do all these things, right? And so what they want to do is conflate those positions. Conflate, they just assume that if you believe it's contrary to human nature, that you want to persecute them, kill them, harm them, discriminate against them in some way.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, somebody, when I was discussing this issue with somebody on the internet, they mentioned that a lot of heterosexual couples commit sodomy together.
Yeah, right.
And they're saying, well, what's the difference? And I said, basically, nothing.
Exactly.
The church is against unnatural acts.
The same thing
which
goes...
Which is completed sodomy. Whether you're two people of the same sex, different sex, three people, animals,
exactly.
It doesn't matter.
I would say it's very clear from human anatomy and human biology what the... reproductive organs are for, and that is reproduction. And
you can't deny that, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So when they're used in a way that is not contradicts reproductive, whether or not it results in pregnancy or not is another question. But what the act is makes pregnancy possible. When your sexual organs are used in any way that doesn't include that possibility. Right. You're acting in a way that's contrary to human nature.
That intentionally impedes that possibility.
Exactly.
Because if somebody is sterile, they can still naturally come together.
But there's no intent.
Right. There is no intentionally impeding of the natural end of the act.
Right.
So it would be similar to if I get pleasure out of stuffing food in my ears rather than my down my throat.
Sure.
It's an unreasonable act, no matter how much pleasure I might get out of such an act.
Right. And what we've had for a very long time is that leave him alone. If that's what he likes to do, then let him do it.
Yeah.
Well, you're stuffing food in your ears. That's going to be bad for you.
Or you're stuffing drugs down your stomach or other things that violate our nature. A lot of people, here's the problem with society becoming materialist too. More and more so, that if you don't see an immediate physical consequence to an act, you simply declare it's morally acceptable they have desire to it.
There's nothing wrong
with it. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. Right. You're not taking into consideration the psychological, the spiritual, and even the physical ramifications of it past the immediate effects.
Or the effect it has on others.
The effect the social effect, and that's an important one. All of those effects aren't being taken. We have become not only more materialistic, but more consequentialist or more utilitarian in our way of looking at life and looking at ethics. And all of these things sort of converge to, saying that if you don't celebrate or at least support Pride Month or Pride Days, then there's something wrong with you.
I would also say, before we run out of time here, that I'm not so sure the whole idea of a straight pride parade makes any sense either for the same reason.
Right. I think it's done for humor's sake, but you're right. Why not have a humility parade?
Can't we... So to go out and say, hey, our identity is straight and we're proud of that is making the same error on just on the flip side of the coin.
Yeah, it is. I think the point is, well, if they can do it, then you have no right telling me I can't do it. And and there's a truth to that, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But both of them are silly is what we're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of them are silly. Let's get out there and have a humility parade. That's what I say.
Right.
All right. So, like we were saying, this, I don't know if it's going to be pulled off or not. I think they're still in the process of getting the permit for it in Boston.
Oh,
this
really?
Straight Pride Parade thing. But it's interesting. I think the bottom line here is let's be humble, let's accept ourselves as we are, and let's try to choose acts, behaviors, and lifestyles that are, that correspond to our nature for the sake of true human fulfillment and flourishing. Last word.
I agree completely. I couldn't have said it better myself. And I think that parades should probably just be for championship winners.
Speaking of that, Wednesday night, the Boston Bruins are going to win the Stanley Cup.
All right.
For the first
time. From your lips to God's ears.
For the first time since 2013.
Wow.
49 years after they beat the St. Louis Blues with that Bobby Orr goal in the Boston Garden.
Here we go.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface. Paul Marano with my guest this week, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. Hope you got something out of it. Let us pray and continue to love our neighbor as ourselves in the best way that we can.
And love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you.
Amen to that. Have a great week, everyone. See you later.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.